This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And it is time now for the Noon Ag Show, brought to you by Macoupin County Farm Bureau, where membership means value. Wayne Schaefer, your country insurance agent in Jerseyville. M&M Service Company, the local solution to your world of needs. And McAdams Millwright Service. And now with the Noon Ag Show, here's Gabe Osborne.
Thanks, Levi. Now here in Ag News on your Friday afternoon. President Biden's bid to help pay for his infrastructure package by ending fossil fuel subsidies could actually help the ethanol industry. Ending decades of multi-billion dollar tax breaks for the oil industry is unlikely to raise oil and ethanol blended gas prices set by the world market, not U.S. policies, and could boost spending on alternative fuel. Renewable Fuels Association Chief Jeff Cooper.
The word from the Biden administration is they would take the savings from removing subsidies for oil producers and really reinvesting that into tax credits and breaks for renewable energy and clean energy.
Biden's American Jobs Act favors electric over liquid-fueled vehicles, but Cooper is still hopeful.
We continue to remind the administration that, look, the goal here is reducing carbon emissions. The goal should not be build X number of electric vehicles or put in X number of charging stations. It should be reduce carbon emissions by X million or billion tons by a certain date.
There's also a subsidy fairness issue.
We had a tax credit for nearly 30 years that expired, though, back in 2011. So we've been without any sort of quote-unquote subsidy for a decade now. And meanwhile, the oil industry has had, you know, all this favorable tax treatment and these provisions buried deep within the tax code.
But none of that will matter if the White House can't get its infrastructure package through Congress, where Cooper admits narrow margins and opposition by oil patch and anti-tax hike Democrats will make up for an uphill climb. In other ag news on tax policy, tax policy is important in helping farmers pass their operation on to their future generations. John Newton is the chief economist for the American Farm Bureau Federation, and he talks about what eliminating the stepped-up basis will mean for farmers.
To reduce the capital gains tax, farmers and ranchers use stepped-up basis, which provides a reset for the basis during intergenerational transfer or to the market value at the date of death. Without stepped-up basis and considering the dramatic increase that we've seen in land values in the recent decades, many farmers would face a burdensome tax hike through capital gains taxes when they sell all or a portion of the farm's assets.
He says the American Farm Bureau and the American Soybean Association recently ran the numbers on what the potential gains taxes would be per acre of cropland.
Based on USDA's data from 1997 and assuming a capital gains tax rate of 20%, we found that the taxes would be anywhere from $500 to $800 per acre across the Corn Belt and over $1,000 per acre in portions of Iowa and Illinois. In areas closer to urban areas where land values have appreciated more rapidly, the taxes could be even higher per acre. The longer the land has been in the family, the higher the capital gains tax most likely is going to be.
Newton says the tax would be a financial burden to farms for up to a decade.
I think one way to put that into perspective is to think about the income generation on the farm. And so we looked at cash rental rates across the country, and that $500 to $1,000 per acre in taxes in many cases was 400 to 500, even 1,000% of the cash rental rate. So it's a hefty tax hike that in many cases would take several years, 4, 5, 6, as many as 10 years to meet that tax obligation.
Finally, Newton says farmers can write their members of Congress asking for support of the stepped-up basis online at fb.org/advocacy. And another ag news here on your Friday. Today was report day from the USDA for their WASD along with supply and demand reports. First off, this month's U.S. corn outlook is for greater feed and residual use, increased corn used for ethanol production, larger exports, and a lower ending stock. Feed and residual use was raised by 50 million bushel to 5.7 billion based on corn stocks reported as of March 1st, which indicated disappearance during the first quarter and rose about 6% relative to last year. Corn used for production of ethanol was raised by 25 million bushel based off the most recent data from the grain crushing and co-products production report and the pace of weekly ethanol production during the March as indicated by the Energy Information Administration's data. Exports are increased by 75 million bushel based on the export inspection data for the month of March that was the largest monthly total on record, surpassing the previous high set back in November of 1989. The season average farm price for corn is unchanged at $4.30 a bushel, as reported prices through February indicate much of the crop was marketed at a lower price. U.S. soybean supply use is unchanged, including higher exports, lower crush and residual use, and seed usage. Soybean exports are raised mainly reflecting record exports through the first half of the marketing year. Soybean crush is reduced this month on a lower domestic soybean meal disappearance forecast and a higher projected extraction rate. Seed use is reduced in line with the plantings for the 21-22 crop indicated in the March 31 prospective planting report. Residual use is reduced based on indications in the March 31st grain stock report. Soybean ending stocks are projected at 120 million bushel, unchanged from the previous forecast, and the season average soybean price is forecasted at $11.25 a bushel, up 1 dime. The soybean oil price is projected at 45 cents a pound, up 4 cents, reflecting sharply higher prices in March, and higher soybean oil prices are expected to continue in the upcoming months as the additional renewable fuel capacity comes online. Soybean meal prices are unchanged at $400 a short ton. And this month's supply and demand outlook for 20 and 21 U.S. wheat, rather, is for lower supply, reduced domestic usage, unchanged exports, and higher ending stocks. Exports are unchanged during the month, but they're offset by class changes for white and hard red winter wheat. Projected 2020 and 21 ending stocks are raised to 582 million bushel, but they're still 17% below last year levels, and the season average farm price is unchanged at $5 a bushel for wheat. And right now at this hour, that has corn prices up just 1 to 2, soybeans down 8 to 10, and wheat about 9 cents higher at this hour. And we'll have a more abbreviated version of that report coming up on Monday morning's edition of the Farm Show. And you can hear your closing commodities right here on WSMI AM and FM coming up just after 1:30 this afternoon. Moving on to state ag news for your Friday. And if you have a well on your property, it's the time of year to think about water testing. Dwayne Friend is a University of Illinois Extension educator in energy and environmental stewardship.
Well, we get a lot of questions throughout the year about wells and how to test them, but especially at this time of year when we start getting into a little bit wetter part of the season, and in some cases we start getting some of those heavy rains, we have situations where, especially on older wells, they may be worried about whether there was some surface water that got in and contaminated the well. And especially in potentially lower-lying areas where water can run over a particular wellhead. And again, we're talking about older wells for this. We just still have people that are concerned about this. And even newer wells, from time to time, we have questions about how to test the water, make sure that it's safe, and all of those kind of things. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about that today and give some people some information about where they can test their water, and there's actually a couple of different avenues that people can take with this. First of all, if you just got some general concerns about the water, maybe it doesn't taste quite right, or maybe it's got a little bit of an odor to it, the first thing that I would suggest is to contact the Illinois State Water Survey. They have a public service lab for water testing. Now, the first thing to say with this is they do not test for bacteria or those types of things. They also do not test for pesticides. But, again, if you have an odor issue or a taste issue, more than likely it's dealing with maybe some minerals or those types of things that can be in the water. And that's kind of what they'll test for that. They can test for a number of different types of metals in there. They can test for arsenic, which is another big concern in some areas of the state. And so they can do that very easily, and if someone would contact the public service lab, but they will give them a sample collection kit. They'll tell them how to get the sample, and then they can send it in. There is a little bit of a cost to it, but it's not exorbitant. I think it's probably in the $60 to $70 range at most. But they can get that sample done for them, get it back very quickly, and the public service lab is really good about talking with individuals before and after the testing so that they can give them not only the results, but then give them some options on what they can do to take care of that if there is an issue involved with it.
And the phone number to the Illinois State Water Surveys Public Service Lab is 217-300-7420. And in other news from the U of I Extension, this expert with the U of I always loves to preview the mushroom hunting season. It's a great tradition every spring, says forestry specialist Chris Evans.
You know, I think one thing is that these wild mushrooms, you find the right ones, they're just tasty. But I think on top of that, it's just the fun of the search. You know, it's like a treasure hunt, going out and finding these species and looking for them, and then you get rewarded, you know, by eating them. And so it's a culture is developed around just enjoying nature and enjoying the search for these. Really a good season mushrooms, they need soil moisture and they need warm soil, but not too hot of conditions. So if we continue on the path we're going, where we've had adequate rain, we've got a lot of soil moisture, we've got a nice slow warm up, our spring mushrooms, and in particular our morels, we should have a great year this year. Now that could be turned off at any time if we get a drought or it gets really warm too fast and the soil temperature increases kind of more than we want it to, then, you know, things could shut off. But I'm hopeful that we'll have a good season this year.
Morel mushrooms are the most popular here in the spring, but Evan says there are quite a number of other edible mushrooms that can be found growing throughout the state, including pheasant backs, oysters, chicken of the woods, chanterelles, lion's mane, black trumpets, and hen of the woods. And finally, another state ag news on your Friday. The Illinois Association FFA announced earlier this week it will host a condensed 2021 Illinois State FFA convention over 3 weeks this upcoming summer, consisting of a hybrid schedule of virtual and in-person sessions following state and local coronavirus health and safety guidelines. One individual that's more than excited to share this news is Illinois State FFA President Lexi Miller from Valmire, Illinois. She explains how this year's convention will be a bit different than normal.
Absolutely. So you had mentioned that part of it was going to be in person and part of our convention is also going to be virtual. And we're going to start off our convention a little bit earlier than we really would. And that'll be on May 28th with our business session. And that'll be completely virtual, similar to the format that we had last year. We'll then move on to some district sessions. So we're going to have some regional events where us as the state officer team and our staff hammer crew and all of everybody who helped put on our convention is going to travel with us to different sites. And the first site is going to be on June 1st, the Corn Belters Corn Crib in Normal. So we'll be celebrating District 1 and District 2. We'll then move on that same week to Southern Illinois Carbondale in the Saluki Stadium, celebrate District 5. Then that next week on June 9th, we're going to be at the Illinois State Fairgrounds celebrating District 3 and District 4. And those are a little bit of our regional events. And then on June 8th, we're going to have our State Award Day. And then you'll get to hear some retiring moments from my teammates and I. And then on June 10th, we're going to elect the next Illinois FFA state officers and announce our national chapter award. So we're very excited that we can offer all of those events in person. And we are excited that we could spread it out. That way we could try to include more of our members and more of our advisory boarders. And also, you may have noticed that each of our district sites, as well as our state sites, are outdoor venues. And that's one way that we could offer an in-person event while also following some COVID guidelines. We are very excited about our hybrid state convention.
And Lexi goes on to explain that with the exception of the virtual business session on May 28th, each day of convention in June will allow for in-person and virtual viewing options, but there will be a limit to how many people in person from each chapter can attend.
Yes, and as of right now, we are putting on some requirements, putting on limitations as to how many each chapter can bring. But as time moves forward, as more of our population in Illinois get vaccinated, we hope that maybe we drop those limitations, that we can invite more people, and it can be more like a traditional convention. But yes, we'll be inviting award winners as well as their family. But we hope that eventually that we can drop those limitations and more people can come and more people can experience this hybrid convention.
And again, that was Illinois State FFA President Lexi Miller. And you can hear the full interview I had with Lexi coming up on Monday morning's edition of the Farm Show, or you can find it on Facebook on our page, WSMI Agriculture, or on our website at WSMIRadio.com. And that'll wrap up your Ag News here on this Friday afternoon, but remember you can always send us your Ag News by email at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Friday afternoon, April 9th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.